Welcome into another edition of the Nice Job Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Hill. Episode 66 coming your way as we move right along here in Season 3. And hope you're enjoying our guests and our topics thus far. We would love for you to leave a review on our podcast. You can go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this. We'd love for you to show a little love in a review and be honest with your feedback. We always talk about that. It'll help us improve the show and make it that much better. You can also drop us comments in our email, podcast@nicejob.com. All right, let's see who our guest is today.
Hi, it's Mary Maltz, Small Business Starship Commander.
Whoa, Starship Commander. Well, I hope we can listen to this episode at ease. Barry, what exactly are we going to be talking about today?
You know, what you sell, people can get anywhere. That's why I'm going to show you how you can focus on the customer experience so your customers keep coming back for more.
Now, that is a great thing for you to be listening to. That is the core of reputation marketing, having a great customer experience. So let's dive into my conversation with Barry Maltz. In this particular episode, we're going to talk about something around reputation. Yes, we're a reputation marketing podcast, so you think we talk about that each and every episode, but we actually haven't explored the topic, and you don't want to hear from the reputation marketing software company about reputation. So we sought the expert on a lot of business topics, but this one in particular, I know he's going to give great insight on. And you know, every single episode, I say I'm excited about the guest, and you say I'm excited about the topic, but it's always true. I'm in a great position to talk to great people and start to pick their brain. Hopefully you can come along the journey and learn some things with me. So let's dive in. After that sort of preamble, it's time to introduce our guest. It is Barry Maltz. And I always ask our guests, just to make sure you get the title correct, what they want. And he gave me his official title, which is Starship Commander. And if you are running a business, that's probably what it feels like, that you're in command of this big ship, and maybe there's too many buttons, maybe there's too many features. Well, we got the commander here. So Commander, thank you very much for joining us on the Nice Job Podcast.
Thank you. And you usually don't have like a Scotty or a Spock or a Bones or something like that. And I have to say, I always say I'm excited to be here when everyone interviews me, but right now I'm really excited to be here.
Awesome. So we got double excitement going. So if you weren't ready to tune in for a full episode now, you know the excitement level is off the charts. Barry, you know, normally when you have an interview like this, perhaps if our audience isn't familiar with the guest, you kind of want to run through some backstory, run through some history. But sometimes I find that people go a little bit too far back. They're like, well, I was born in this hospital and my mom did this for a living, things like that. So I want to fast forward a bit and try to either pinpoint a moment, if it's there in your history, when you kind of started to feel that you had a lot of knowledge that was worthy of sharing, right? Because everyone kind of goes through their own personal journey. You're doing things for your family, you're doing things for yourself. But then there's something to take that extra step. And you've gone on, you know, you're an author, you host your own podcast. Was there a moment where you're like, you know what? I really want to start sharing what I know with other people.
Yeah, I think when I sold my last business and my wife said to me, if you want to stay together, no more businesses. Because we had been kicked out of business, we had gone into business, and we sold the last business. She said, that's it. I've been through too many highs and lows. And at that point, and this was right after the internet bubble of the late 90s, I thought I had something to share because at that point, Sean, people thought, well, all I got to do to actually sell my business is scratch a couple ideas down in a napkin and sell it to a VC for millions of dollars. And what my first book, which is called You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business, talked about was it is a great journey, but there's a lot more to it than that. And there's a lot of ups and downs, and that's part of the fun of it.
And looking back, obviously we tried to do a tiny bit of research. I have to come in actually as cold as possible, but you know, I just want to make sure we know enough is looking at some of the titles of your books and some of the topics, you really kind of see the evolution of business throughout. And it's always a universal truth that things are kind of going to go through change and go through shifts. But do you think there's a little bit of cyclical nature? And where I'm kind of going with this is, and our topic of reputation today is in a digital world, word of mouth still exists, but it kind of changes. But that feels like that core concept of having a good reputation has always remained. So in your mind, how cyclical is business, or how much is it actually continuously moving forward and evolving?
Well, I think the themes are exactly the same. They just get implemented in different ways, right? So word of mouth was always there. If someone recommended someone to someone else, right, you skipped all those other layers and you went to trusted advisor. Now, someone that we don't know, if they write a great review on a website, you trust that almost as much as if someone you did know. So the tactics just change, but the same thing that people feel has always been there.
And do you think it's even more important as we've kind of shifted to almost a broadcast society? I mean, anyone with a phone now has an HD camera, can kind of put out any sort of message, and people out of nowhere seem to get these large platforms where, you know, some kid in the Midwest all of a sudden has a million followers on TikTok. That's quite an audience. So when you talk about like amplifying your customers' voices, I feel like that's got to be especially more important because they become their own broadcasters.
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking that we used to call people that used to share a lot, recommend a lot of folks as sneezers, right? And if you think about when you sneeze, it goes all around. Whatever you just sneezed goes all around people that are right to you. But now people have huge megaphones. I mean, this idea of misinformation, truth, whatever it is, recommendations, they've always been there throughout society. But now the megaphones just got bigger and communication spreads that much faster, Sean.
So in the world of influencers, right, because there's some people now that have gotten savvy and they understand that some people are getting paid to make brand. How do you still get great amplification of organic reviews? I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting Mary down the street to be an influencer. But at the same time, I think people have gotten a little bit more investigatory when it comes to looking at like testimonials on a website, right? Trying to figure out, was that copywritten or is that kind of true? In your mind, is there any strategy, is there any tactic of how to make sure that you're getting the best application of organic reviews?
Well, first of all, you've got to ask, and you've got to continually ask, and you need to have a mechanism to continually ask. Unfortunately, asking for reviews, asking referrals is always second, always takes the back seat for so many companies because they get a new customer, they're servicing it, and they go out to get another new customer. They don't think about trying to get a review at every stage during the process. And if you don't have a mechanism, like in any part of marketing, to actually do it what I call automagically for you or consistently, it's never going to happen. And I don't think, marketing influencers or small business influencers, they're important, but I think people are pretty savvy. They want to look at and they want to say, how many reviews does this thing have? Does it have at least 20 or 30 reviews? And are some of them bad? And if they are bad, what did the company do about it? I know I use TripAdvisor a lot to say, should I stay at this hotel or not? And I look at a lot of the bad reviews because I want to know if someone posted a bad review, did management say something? Because I believe if I have a bad experience, at least I know they'll be there and they'll help me out. Because every once in a while, you're going to have a bad experience, Sean. It's just the way it is.
And it's the evolution, right? The evolution of a relationship. Because if you see a review from 3 years ago that says this business showed up late and wasn't on time, and then you see 2 years ago they weren't on time, and a year ago they weren't on time, it kind of becomes a trend. And if that's important to you as a consumer, that's probably going to steer you the other way. Because I've always said that I think when people read reviews, good, bad, or indifferent, they're really looking for themselves. Do you find you're doing that same thing? You're trying to find something that identifies. You talk about TripAdvisor, like someone saying, hey, this beach is like this. And you're like, I'm not that type of person. That's a great review, but doesn't identify.
Right. So if someone says, I'm looking at TripAdvisor, and says, well, this was a great place for a family vacation, I'm on a business trip, I skip to the next one. Right. So again, you're right, Sean. You want to see yourself in those reviews because, again, it goes like this. If this company serviced this person pretty well, if I'm similar to them, chances are I'll have a good experience as well. I don't even read the product descriptions anymore that the hotels or people put out there. I just read the reviews. That shows how important it is.
That's a very interesting point that you bring up because we talk about, there's a recent stat that it was I believe it was 12 times more credible than what a salesperson's saying. And we kind of in the reputation marketing space say, if you have your reviews front and center, that's going to get them to the sales call, right? And then that's when they're ready to receive that message. Instead of perhaps, you know, I don't say sign from the step one, because obviously you have to be, you know, out front in that regard, but kind of building that trust and into that gateway, which kind of goes back to, all right, if they're identifying people through their reviews, is there something a business owner should be doing while asking or through their review system to ensure that they're getting different stories? Because the one complaint that we kind of hear is, I get a bunch of 5-star reviews with no detail.
Or it was
is
great.
Is there anything that you've kind of discovered or strategy to get that?
5-star review, it was great, and that was it. Yeah, I think you should ask them for as much detail as possible because, again, we always learn through stories. And as much as you can tell a story in your review, the specific circumstances about, you know, so for example, I'll review a hotel. I got in late at night. My plane was delayed. And there was someone right at the counter and they said, oh God, you look like you've had a long plane ride. I know you checked in online already. Here's your thing. I'll get you right to your room. The more specifics I can give you, go, God, sometimes I arrive late at hotels. I know I'm going to be taken care of. I don't have to worry about that. So tell the start trying to get them to tell stories in their reviews.
And you talked about replying, or getting back or seeing how management changes their reviews. We kind of have to talk about the bad reviews in a way. I'm a big proponent that every review is a marketing opportunity, right? Because you can show how you're going to learn and grow, and then in the future show, prove that you've done that. Even the mid-range ones, your 3 or 4, kind of shows that you're able to identify that, hey, maybe we didn't live up to that expectation, but here's the steps you're kind of going to do it. Is it past the time that businesses should be quote-unquote fearful and doing kind of shady tactics like review gating and things like that to avoid bad reviews? Or have we finally reached the time of, look, embrace feedback, just actually use it and learn from it?
I tell small businesses they got to grow up. Not everybody's going to like you. Not everyone's going to have an amazing review or amazing experience. Find out what you did wrong. Go out and fix it and make sure that chances are it doesn't happen again. So, for example, I just bought some fancy pool furniture from Frontgate. It came damaged, right? So I posted on the website saying, hey, I bought this expensive furniture from Frontgate. It came damaged. I showed some pictures. They responded literally within an hour, right, to that. They had me contact them. They're sending new furniture, no cost, and I can keep the old stuff. So to me, I'm going to write and say, hey, this is really what happened. I think that's really helps them in the review process more than just a positive review. If you turn around a client from a negative to positive, they're going to tell that story much more than they've just had a good time.
Yeah, and I love that you said that you added photos, obviously, to kind of show like your experience. And that's the power that the customer has. But as the business owner, you also have the ability to use visuals, I don't say to your advantage, but to help kind of tell the complete story. So, kind of crafting, perhaps, if you're taking photos of this work you're doing, you get that great review matching those together, that kind of tells the complete story. But I find that a lot of businesses just haven't really adopted or really taken to the visual mediums. And not necessarily, I want to make clear here, is videos are great. I find video testimonials tend not to travel as well, that the studies really aren't behind it to show it goes. So I think text-based for the review's sake. But like photos, videos of your crew and your team really helps to build that connection further. But it seems that not many people are taking it on. In your opinion, why isn't that happening?
Well, I think it takes more time, right? And I think that, okay. I mean, again, the reason that I posted pictures, because I wanted to show the damage that really came, because again, I'm a customer experience nut, and I wanted them to be able to appreciate what really had happened. Again, you buy from a first-rate company, you expect to get first-rate products. I think that videos don't travel well because it takes too long. People want to read something quick about the review for a handful of seconds and then move on to the next one. It's not each individual one, it's them combined together. I know the way that I shop a lot of times on Amazon is I won't buy anything that doesn't have 20 reviews or more, whether they're positive or negative, right? I want to make sure there's a core number of people that have purchased these things. And if this one has 10,000 reviews versus something has 60,000 reviews, even if it's a little bit more negative, I'll buy the one that had 60,000 because I feel, well, the chances are I'll have a better experience. It's just the way that I do things. The problem, Sean, is that small business owners don't pursue as a marketing strategy to get these reviews. Even though they understand how important it is, they just don't have a mechanism in place to do it.
Do you think that that is a product of just being so focused on getting the craft right and not really thinking about the full complement? Because I always bring up that, like restaurants, for example, they put tip right on the receipt, exactly. Right on the bill, right? They tell you, like, this is your time to give us the feedback. We're putting it right here.
Then what the tip percentage should be with the dollar amount, so you don't have to do the math in your head.
Exactly. I love that. Where it's like, oh, 15%. Good. This. Great. I love those things. And it's funny, in that industry, it doesn't seem to be an issue. But for, in Nice Jobs audience in particular, a lot of home service professionals, that doesn't seem to be the case. Do you think it's because they're focused on the craft? Do you think it's just this over politeness that seems to carry on? What is that barrier you think that's keeping most people down?
I think it's the same barrier while people don't automate their marketing or have a consistent marketing strategy. They just don't. They're so focused on delivering their product or service, they're not thinking about the sales and marketing pipeline. And so they just don't have the tools to do it. They don't get around to it. But there are tools available now, like Nice Jobs, where you can actually automate it. Once you set it up, it just happens. It just goes. It takes a little time to set it up, but then you can get a whole pipeline of reviews, just like for sales and marketing. They just don't think about it, and they haven't discovered the tools that can help them.
And it also becomes like customer-driven growth, right? So now one customer is helping you get another customer, and that cycle kind of builds on. And that's such a great foundation to build a business on, because now not only are you getting feedback that's going to help you craft, you know, your culture, your systems, your processes, but now you're kind of getting this referral system going. And one thing in particular I did want to touch on was, we looked over the past 2 years or so, you know, pandemics and lockdowns and things like that. I feel like the businesses that use reputation as part of the foundation were the ones that came through that the strongest. Have you seen the same?
Absolutely. Because again, when things are down, right, people are going to go back to their most trusted source because they have some comfort in it. And if you had a solid relationship. Now, that being said, it was also a time, I believe, of the last year and a half where loyalty was up for grabs, right? Because people were doing things differently. I mean, I tell the story where I've been traveling on American Airlines for 40 years. I have 3 million miles in that airline. But during the pandemic, they decided they were not going to keep the middle seat on the airplane vacant. And for whatever reason, maybe it's nonsensical, but I felt more safe having the middle seat vacant. So I stopped flying American Airlines and I started flying Southwest Airlines because they kept the middle seat open. So now post-pandemic, now that I'm vaccinated, I won't say that all the time I fly Southwest now, but I fly Southwest a heck of a lot more than I did before the pandemic because I'm aware of them and the experience that I had.
You talk about the loyalty kind of being up, but it also talks about like identifying, right? And it's almost that Americans said, these are the type of customers that we're considering. I mean, they'll try to serve anybody they can, but this is the type we're looking for. And so sometimes making, you know, changes, either big or small, can kind of affect that relationship. But I think it also goes back to the reason you want to make a connection and accept that feedback is to kind of establish right away that this is a relationship, right? That no matter what.
Yeah, you bring up the idea of relationship. This is what customers want. They don't just want to buy your product or service. They can pretty much get that anywhere. They want to have a relationship. They want to have an experience with you. They want to know that they're part of something, right? Why do you think, you know, people at Harley Davidson and Apple and, you know, I'm a cyclist, so I love the Specialized brand or Rafa or something like that. We want to feel like we're part of a larger community. And that requires to have a personal experience with your company. And the good news is there's all sorts of electronic tools to make sure that personalized experience happens. You know, it used to be that you had to apply people to have a personalized experience, right? I don't know if you remember when people used to pump your gas at gas stations, right? Now, if you don't want to pump your gas, you still can go to New Jersey and you can go to Oregon, right? They pump the gas for you. Yep. But they used to come out in uniforms. They used to clean your windshield, look at your oil, vacuum your car. And they had to apply people for that service, but now computers can do it for that and personalize everything. I mean, we all remember when Amazon started, when I would log on to their site with cookies, it would say, "Hi, Barry, how are you?" You know, it would call me by name. Versus when I used to go to the Gap store down the street, which I'd been 12 times, they had no idea who I was and what I had bought from them. So they want that personal relationship.
And it brings up an interesting point because you talk about pumping gas, and I spent a lot of time in my life in New Jersey. I do know how to pump my own gas. Can't say the same for my sister. But the interesting part about it, though, is the frustration of someone else pumping your gas as you saw the pump get easier. So there's that weird sort of balance of I became more critical of how quickly I was being serviced, how quickly, like, I saw the pump click. Why don't I have my receipt? Why am I sitting here waiting for you? Is that my expectations, because it seemed so easy, became a little bit higher, right? I never before, you know, when they were still doing card swipes and things like that, thought about how quick gas should be until I went over the bridge to Pennsylvania, realized it's a boom, bit, 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 and done. It's funny that now as customers, you know, you talk about online chat bots and things like that, is there's kind of this desire to want to be a part of the process even more. I think gone are the days where I'm just calling the expert and it kind of goes. People are doing research before they call and they're looking to constantly kind of be in contact, have those things. And I think that kind of speaks to your point of kind of embracing technology a little bit and really diving into it and making sure that you don't stretch yourself out thin as a person. Also ensures that you're matching the needs of your customer.
And I think you have to think about it differently. I mean, I wrote my third book that talked about what does the current customer experience look like in a self-service world. I mean, people would much rather schedule an appointment online than call to schedule an appointment. most people would rather order online than call a person or something like that. So the expectations have changed, and you have to make that interface with your company, that conversation, that electronic conversation with the company, a lot easier, or the way that people want to consume your product or service. Now, certainly if you have an older generation customer where your customer's in the 80s, maybe it's a little bit different. But most other people, they'd rather just do self-serve. I mean, it's funny because self-serve started back in the, it was in the 20s or the 40s with the automats, you know, in New York. I don't know if you're familiar with the automat where, you know, you used to put the sandwiches in the vending machine, you used to take them out, and that was all self-serve. And that was kind of popular. And then, of course, it morphed into the ATM cards, right, with Barclays. And then you didn't need a teller anymore. But what's very interesting to me, Sean, is the only area that self-serve really has not really been the preferable way is really when you check into a hotel. They've tried self-serve check-in hotel, except for Las Vegas, because, of course, things are different there. But people want to be welcomed into your home by another person. And the people behind the desk now, I don't know if you've noticed, the fancier hotels, they come around the side of the desk and they give you the key. And there's less of the division.
Yeah.
So you got to know your audience.
Yeah. You know, I didn't really think about that, but I the last time I checked in the hotel, that's exactly kind of what happened. And it's a small soul thing, but it's funny. I didn't really recognize it. Sometimes I try to, I guess as a non-traditional marketer or someone that's, you know, in that people side of things, look for, oh, that's why they're doing that. And that one kind of went aside, but it definitely felt more of a comforting thing. But Barry, I know there's plenty of avenues we could still explore and kind of go down. I like to keep these, you know, nice and digestible. And I always tell the audience, if they flood our inbox saying that we want Barry back, we will schedule part two or part three, whatever we sort of need. But before I let you go, I want to ask you the question we've been asking all the guests here in season three. And it's a pretty simple one, or maybe a challenging one. So for you to decide, you can take it any way you like, either business or personal, but what do you embrace more, challenges or opportunities?
You know, I embrace challenges. There's no question about that, because I want to see if I can accomplish something that most people haven't been able to accomplish. So, for example, this past summer, I'm a century rider, so I've ridden a lot of 100-mile rides. I decided that I wanted to ride 150 miles across Michigan in one day. The rest of my team said, that was crazy, you'll never do it. I trained for it and I accomplished it. And that was a huge challenge because I wanted to be able to meet my goal. I'm a very goal-oriented person. In fact, next summer, I'm going to ride across Wisconsin. It's 235 miles. It'll be a while before I get to Texas, but I want to keep putting those challenges in place.
I love that. Not only just you personally challenging yourself, but talking about being goal setting and kind of focusing on that. So I know a lot of our listeners will identify with that answer as well. If someone's not ready to pop on the helmet and the cycling shoes and catch you across Wisconsin, but they want to hear more about you or they want to check you out in some sort of way, I know I'll kind of give the shout out there. Host of the Small Business Radio Show that you're kind enough to have me on. Nice job, you know, sponsoring a couple episodes over there as well. But if someone wants to get in touch or learn more about you, where should we direct them?
Sure, just go to my website, which is barrymoltz.com, BarryMoltz.com, or any of the social media. I'm at Barry Moltz, except for TikTok. Still don't do TikTok.
All right, he's just trying to gear up on all the dances before you officially launch on the platform.
I just don't have the moves.
Barry, thank you so much for all of those that are watching or listening. We have all those links and descriptions down in the show notes as well. And I have a feeling I put it on screen in the editing. So you can see it right there. So be sure to connect with Barry. Pick up some of those books as well. We just ordered the Nice Job Crew. We ordered a couple over here. And I know our team's going to start diving through them. Barry, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join us here on the Nice Job Podcast. And have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Sean. You did a nice job.
I had a feeling Barry was waiting the entire conversation to drop that line. Special thanks once again to Barry Moltz for joining me on the show. I had the opportunity to be on his program as well, Small Business Radio. Invite you to check out those episodes. Nice Job is a proud sponsor of that show as well. So, hey, why not subscribe to both? All right, let me get to my three key takeaways from this episode. My first takeaway was when Barry was actually talking about his hotel experience and how subtle changes had a larger impact. The small reception coming from behind the desk to hand you the key to kind of meet you at a level without a desk in the middle. He talked about the feeling that conveyed, and I would invite you to think about your own business. And is there some small, subtle change you can make to increase a certain feeling? That might be enough to put your customer experience far above your competitors. My second key takeaway, and you kind of knew this one was coming, ask for reviews. Barry talked about how critical it is, but also with opinions being able to be shared so quickly and so broadly now with the digital landscape, it's really important that you're gathering feedback from every single opportunity you can. My final takeaway is how to take those bad into the good. Barry talked about that customers nowadays are looking as much for how you turned a bad customer into a good customer or a bad experience into a good experience, more so than just these glowing reviews. So don't be afraid to face customers that may be unhappy. Find out how you can take them from dissatisfied to satisfied, and you'll find that that story alone is enough to get you on the path of customer-driven growth. And customer-driven growth, absolutely imperative to businesses in this day and age. The only way to do that is to make sure that you're showing up for every single opportunity. If you have any comments on this episode or a takeaway that I didn't mention, be sure to drop us an email, podcast@nicejob.com. Now, at the top of the show, I'll ask you once again, we'd love for you to drop some reviews on our little show here, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'll be back next week with episode 67. I'm your host, Sean Hill. Until then, hope you're being healthy, hope you're being safe, and don't forget to have a little fun out there as well. Take care.